My God, Nikki, it's almost been 2 weeks since we put out another episode of our podcast.
We can't let the good citizens of Gotham down, Ben.
No, we can't. We have a moral duty to provide film analysis of the best and worst superhero movies. We must, Nikki, we must.
But we can't do that as Ben Hamlin and Nikki Boylan. What if the Joker were to find us?
Yes, yes, that's right. We must become our alter egos, Batman and Robin.
Quick, to the Bat Studio!
Atomic batteries to power.
Initiating soundproofing in 3, 2, 1.
Live from Studio 23 in Corvallis, Oregon, this is Super Cinema, the comic book podcast where we break down the movies that comic books have created. I'm your host, Ben Hamlin, and I'm joined, as always, by...
Nikki Boylan.
Nikki, what are we talking about on this bat-tastic episode of Super Cinema?
At this episode of Bat Cinema, we are talking about Batman, the movie from 1966.
Not just that, it sounds like we're also going to be talking about the Black Panther, not the Bat Panther. As well as the comics that we have been reading. It's a normal episode of Super Cinema, but we, of course, are paying tribute to the wonderful life and career of Adam West, whose voice I mixed and butchered with William Shatner's in the opening of this episode, and whose work we both greatly respect as we both grew up in some way or another with the Batman 66 TV show and movie. Yeah, he passed away about a week ago on June 9th, 2017. And, you know, he lived a long life, and we're here to talk about that fantastic movie of his that we love very, very much. Isn't that right?
West in peace, Batman.
Did you just... No, you know what? That's a pun. He'd be proud.
He would be. Come on, that entire movie.
All right, well, let's jump right into it. All right, we're going to start off, first things first, with the Black Panther trailer, which came out also on June 9th. This is a movie that has rather been highly anticipated by me, and I'm sure a majority of the comic book community. It features the Black Panther, who debuted in last year's Captain America Civil War, and has been rumored for, you know, nearly a decade to be receiving his own movie. The wheels for that finally started rolling when he actually officially appeared in Civil War, and we got director Ryan Coogler on it. That being said, Nikki, what a fucking trailer.
God, that was so good. It totally drowned out the fact that the poster was so bad.
Yeah, the poster was not very good. Let's move on. no, it's like, it's awkward. It just doesn't look good.
I could do better Photoshop than that.
Yeah, same.
But yeah, I'm super excited for Black Panther. I love Black Panther. I was super thrilled to see him in Civil War. And Chadwick Boseman is doing a great job. So... And of course, I watched it, and I was just overwhelmed by the cool visuals, the amazing shots, and the trailer. How the trailer didn't give... It gave us what we needed to see to be totally addicted to it, but not enough so that we really knew what was going on. We know who the villain is. Michael B. Jordan. And we got to see Lupita. So I was happy about that. So we get all the good stuff, and I'm super excited for Black Panther.
Yeah, absolutely. I gotta say, this looks like to be like Guardians of the Galaxy level of expanding the Marvel Universe so far.
We finally get to see Wakanda, so...
Yeah, and it looks like some real... we were kind of talking about this with Wonder Woman. Looks like they're going to inject some real fucking set design into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I'm so
happy. You
know,
most of the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been very real world, I think to its detriment in some places. It's cool to see fights on the helicarrier and in the raft, but... For the most part, it's just been set in, you know, New York or L.A. or, you know, very bland locations that we're familiar with. And then, you know, it gets even blander sometimes with fights in, like, parking structures or airport terminals. And it doesn't quite capture the weird magnificence of the Marvel Cinematic Universe unless it's a cosmic story or a story set in Asgard. But with Wakanda, that's way different.
Yeah, it's cool because we get... Wakanda has higher technology than... basically the rest of the world, plus the influence from African tribes, so we get that really cool imagery. And so it really is going to be, I think, very visual, especially with the set design, because this is some magical technology that they can really implement these great visuals and really kind of show off here.
Yeah, absolutely. The Afrofuturism that's being shown through this trailer looks fantastic, and it shows up. Well, do you remember when we were talking about Thor 3 Ragnarok, like the beautiful like Kirby architecture in the background?
Yeah.
This thing is filled with it. You know, obviously it's drawing particular design elements from various, you know, kind of Central African cultures. But, you know, it's also pulling in that Kirby design influence. There's that one shot after Dr. Claw stops talking, or they stop focusing on Dr. Claw, and it actually cuts to, like, Black Panther's back for the first time, and there's, like, a secret passageway door that opens for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the floor. And like that, like the way those like walls and panels are architectured, like it looks great. It's a perfect melding of like Kirby influence and, you know, the real world historical African influence that are both kind of stirred together to create this awesome Afrofuturist, beautiful sci-fi landscape.
I love it.
Yeah, me too. Like the designs are really pulling through on this. And I'm really excited to see like what it looks like outside of like little 2-3 second snippets. Like, I want to see more. This is intriguing me beyond words because it's so, I don't mean to sound xenophobic here, but it's literally so foreign to us. It is completely divorced from, you know, what we've seen so far in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which has just been, you know, skyscrapers and American cities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thrilled.
Also, Michael B. Jordan is Killmonger.
I know, right?
Yeah, that I cannot confess to be too familiar with him, the character, but like he already looks fantastic. He looks like he's going to be a very physical threat to Black Panther, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of his villains are. Black Panther is, of course, a genius scientist, but I have a feeling that he's going to be getting in a lot of fights on a lot of like mountains,
which I'm all for.
Yeah, Killmonger looks absolutely fantastic. You know, Michael B. Jordan, like, kind of pulls off like, a cool dead-eyed look in that scene where he's, like, what looks like he's marching into a throne room or something. It's just
exciting. That's where I had to just pause the trailer and just, like, rethink my entire life. I was like, here he is.
Yeah.
This is just Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger. I didn't know I needed this until I saw it. And now I really, really need it.
Well, and also, like, his weaponry, his designs, the costume that he's wearing, that first shot of Black Panther showing up in the tree and then someone just smacking into a car. I want this very badly, and it pains me that we're gonna have to wait like another 7 months for it. it's coming out soon.
I know. Gotta get through everything else first.
Yeah, we still got a Spider-Man on the horizon.
Yeah, and Justice League.
God, that's a weird timeline to think about. The Justice League is coming out only 3 months before the Black Panther movie.
Mm-hmm. Still gonna see it, though. Even though it's Joss Whedon now.
Partially Joss Whedon. He's only going back for reshoots. And look, I don't like him either, but he is only going back for some reshoots.
I saw this post that was like, okay, now what reshoot are we gonna get? Who's gonna fall face first into Diana's boobs this time?
Ugh.
Because we know how much Joss Whedon sucks at writing women. Or even, like, just representing them. Like, I'm just so afraid. I was like, these reshoots better be more Wonder Woman. And then I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, did you get a chance to read Joss Whedon's script treatment for Wonder Woman?
No.
Oh, well,
I'm terrified.
I think I just retweeted it. So you can go ahead and check my Twitter when you get a chance.
Oh, God.
What if Wonder Woman was a movie in which Wonder Woman was constantly objectified and explained to herself what is great about her by Steve Trevor the entire time.
I think I would vomit.
Like, what if Wonder Woman was a movie in which Steve Trevor just mansplained to her why he thought she was dangerous? Because that's Joss Whedon's treatment of Wonder Woman. It's real bad. I, like, just read it before we started recording, and I can't believe there are real human beings who want him to be anywhere near Batgirl.
What?
Oh, yeah, Joss Whedon's directing Batgirl.
No!
Yeah, that's real
no,
bad.
No, not Batgirl!
Especially since he gave an interview in which he said that he wanted to focus on Batgirl's trauma.
Oh, no.
Which means we're getting Killing Joke.
No.
And I can't think of a less appealing thing I want to see than fucking Killing Joke over and over and over again for the fucking 10th time, because we don't know how to tell an original story with Batgirl, and men have to focus on her fucking drama.
I don't...
And I do mean men, because I fucking... Hey, Gail Simone doesn't do that shit.
No, anyway, she didn't.
Anyway, I hate Alan Moore. I don't hate Alan Moore. He also said he doesn't like Killing Joke. I just wish we'd stop bringing Killing Joke back over and over and over again. And I wish that was not the basis for a Batgirl movie. I wish we were a little more creative and actually did a fun Batgirl story that didn't, you know, trigger a warning for a bad word, focus on her rape.
Yeah, like, why they gotta do that? Like, I have so many problems with this.
Like, they're just Joss Whedon.
I have no idea. Sorry. I have no idea how to write a woman. Oh, I know what I should do. Drama.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's because studio executives and Joss Whedon in particular are talentless, uncreative hacks.
Why do I always have to keep cleaning up after you boys?
Anyway, Black Panther looks great. Can't wait to see Black Panther stop giving Joss Whedon movies. Thank you very much.
Yes, please. I'm free for direction.
Yeah, in fact, maybe give, I don't know, more superhero movies to more diverse voices, because as we are seeing with Ryan Coogler's trailer for Ryan Coogler's Black Panther, almost said Batman again, unironically this time.
Black Panther.
I mean, that is also an accurate summation of both of those characters. Yep. And as we're seeing with Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman, sometimes it's good when non-white males, make superhero movies. I myself am saying that as a white male who is making a superhero comedy, so give other people a shot, not just Joss Whedon four times in a row.
I'm just like, how about you give it to someone who actually knows how to write women and people of color?
Also, it just occurred to me that I started off that joke as four times in a row, like that was an exaggeration, but Avengers 1, Avengers 2, Justice League, and Batgirl, so actually, no, that is four. That's disappointing.
Stop giving Joss Whedon movies.
Okay, yeah, like, obviously at this point, like, we need to expand the diversity of who's behind these movies in a big way, but also maybe just less people who are Joss Whedon.
Please, God.
You know, it's like that joke a while back that, like, Marvel has more white guys named Chris than they have any POC leads at all.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, for a while that was true. I think we're better now. I'm not entirely sure. I guess there's now three black members of the Avengers. But, like, I think it's the thing again, like, just, we need less Joss Whedons.
Yes, we do.
Anyway, that's enough about that. I think we're both extremely excited for Black Panther. Like, I, in particular, am just excited for, like, the designs of that world. You know, again, the weapons look gorgeous, the architecture looks gorgeous, it just all looks absolutely amazing. And I'm stoked.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts on that trailer?
It's gonna be freaking awesome.
I completely agree. All right, well, let's take a quick break from talking about how excited we are for Black Panther and how angry we are at the Batgirl movie. We're going to listen to some ads for some other Infinity Break shows, and then we'll be right back to talk about Batman 66. We work tirelessly to make this show and others free and accessible to listeners. So if you like what we do here at Infinity Break and you want to support us, there's a very easy way to do that. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/infinitybreak. If you want to chip in a monthly donation to help us keep this show and all of our comics, podcasts, and videos running and improving with each month, we'd greatly appreciate your show of support. Right now, we're working on improving the audio quality for both our videos and our podcasts, as well as developing new shows that are coming out in the next couple of months, including new podcasts, new comedy sketches, and new web series. We hope that you're just as excited as we are about the future of Infinity Break, and we're hoping that you can be a part of it. Once again, that's patreon.com/infinitybreak, and every donation helps. Thanks for listening, and as always, tell your friends. And now, back to the show. All right, we're back, and today we're going to be talking about Batman 1966, which I think is incredibly notable for both you and I, Nikki, as it's an integral part of our childhood and our exposure to perhaps the character of Batman, but maybe just the DC universe as a whole. Would you say that's accurate?
I would say that's very accurate.
Yeah, I know I was introduced to it at a pretty young age. I spoke during the Wonder Woman episode about how my mom was kind of into that era of DC, you know, the kind of Super Friends, Batman 66, Linda Carter, Wonder Woman. So that this was one of my entry points into that world. And, you know, this may not be that surprising, but it's kind of my frame of reference for a lot of DC stuff as well. And my frame of reference for, you know, why I react to a lot of these characters the way I do is because this was one of my starting points. This wasn't like my very first Batman experience. You know, I'm pretty sure I saw maybe the, well, probably not the Burton movies first, but, you know, some sort of extra Batman-related media far before I saw this show. But, you know, it shaped it in a way that, like, I can't seem to shake.
No, I can totally agree with that. For me, it was my dad bought the DVD on a whim when we were switching from VHS to DVD. And we were at Costco, and he just picked it up on a whim, and then we watched it, and I was like, so this is what superheroes are. And that was just, I mean, I think Superman was first for me, the 40s cartoon. But the first one that actually got me involved with superheroes as a whole was probably the Batman 66.
Well, it really does leave just such a remarkable impact in its weird, colorful stylization, its odd devotion to its source material. I mean, and like this show, like it goes without saying, perhaps, like it's got a legacy.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, the TV show it's based on, and that era of comics, I mean, are really, you know, the lens through which like a lot of the world, maybe for better or for worse, still views comics.
Yeah.
You know, I can't see a headline about some comic related news without, you know, from like a more mainstream source, not an industry specific one. But from a more mainstream source without, like, Bam, Biff, and Pow appearing in the title in some way.
Right.
But do you want to just dive right into the movie?
Yeah, sure. Did you want to start, or do you want me to?
I'll start. You know, it's weird. The thing about this movie is, like, I don't think we're not really going to be doing a review in the traditional sense like we do with a lot of movies that are newer. And by new, I guess I even just mean within the last 15 years or so. I don't think this will be a review because, like, I don't think there's really anything, you know, wrong with the movie. Or at least not that I can address, you know, in any sort of reviewing context. I'm not here to be even critical, but just more of kind of celebrate this film.
Yeah, I feel like that's pretty much what we were doing. Like, when we were just like, oh, my favorite, I was just listening to the Wonder Woman podcast. And when you were like, yeah, Batman 66 is my favorite superhero movie. And I just got really excited and was like, oh, me too. And then we were like, we're going to do that next time, right? And then Adam West died.
And yeah, that was genuinely unfortunate timing on our end.
Yeah, so I guess that's what we're doing is more celebrating kind of this is kind of where the origin of comic book films came from and kind of how we see comic book media in general. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, it's certainly one of the first and one of the biggest. But yeah, I think this is just going to be more of a celebration. Like, I like to think I'm, you know, all right with when it comes to critiquing films. But, like, this is so before my time. I almost feel I can't speak to, you know, its technical qualities, its casting decisions. Because I am not as familiar with the context around this movie like I am with, say, you know, any MCU movie that comes out now or Wonder Woman. Because I'm not privy to all the behind-the-scenes stuff like I am with any movie that came out recently.
Right.
So that makes, you know, a movie like this, a movie that's so old and so divorced from, like, the rest of... I mean, look, this is a TV movie. Like, there's no beating around the bush about that. It's filmed on TV sets with TV cameras. It just happens to be, you know, 90 minutes, 2 hours long or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, it feels weird to critique it like it's a film. I mean, it's not. It's an extended, like, children's adventure.
It's pretty much just a longer episode of the TV series.
Yeah. So we can't really, you know, review it in that sense. But what we can do is we can celebrate Mr. Adam West's career and the fantastic performances that this movie is just filled with.
Right.
So I think one of the things that's interesting about this movie, you know, looking back retrospectively, is that it's so radically different from what comic book movies are like today.
You know, I frequently describe the current era of comic book movies as very self-serious, and it's because they are. They take themselves way too seriously, I think, in some cases. And I think that's a problem across the board. I don't think that's a problem with just Marvel or DC, although I've got, you know, certain things to nitpick about either of them. But this, you know, there's no seriousness here. You know, it's all melodrama. It's all camp. It's corny. It's colorful. It's stylistic. The, you know, Evil League of Batman villains, the Rogues Gallery, just has a giant octopus for a logo.
I was honestly the whole time just thinking, like, oh my God, there's a Hydra reference here.
Oh, I'm sure there is. But like, you know, it wraps itself up in absurdity, and it doesn't apologize for that at all. It's big, it's dumb, it's corny, it's comedy. And it's not even like really poking fun at the genre. That just is the genre.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it was at the time. It's not like it's trying to be anything else.
Yeah, for people who might not be aware, like, this isn't a parody of Batman comics. This is a really faithful adaptation of Batman comics. Because in the kind of late Silver Age, well, depending on how you want to define the various boundaries of Golden Age, Silver Age, and Bronze Age, but in relatively the late Silver Age, this was DC Comics. You know, they, you know, there was a blog for a long time that was just like supermanisajerk.tumblr.com or something like that. That was like a bunch of, you know, it was a bunch of old Silver Age covers of just Superman being an asshole to people with, like, you know, "No, Jimmy, even though you bought me this custom bathrobe, I must burn it before your eyes." Or whatever. No, I think he says something dumber than that. He's like, "No, I'll never be your father, Jimmy," because it's like the Father's Day issue.
Oh God.
Or like, "I'm sorry, Jimmy, you must marry this gorilla."
Oh my God.
What's that Rainbow Batman cover where it's like, "Batman, why are you wearing a different colored costume every night? Well, if I don't, Robin, Gotham will be in danger." As he's like strapping on like a salmon pink Batman costume. Like, I mean, you've seen, like, and just, it's impossible to read 1960s Silver Age Batman comic dialogue in anything else but Burt Ward and Adam West's voices.
It's true, though.
But Batman, last night you wore the green costume, and tonight you're wearing the red. Why? "I must wear a different colored Batman costume each night." No further explanation given. Just no further explanation given. Well, anyway, the point is that Silver Age is just known for, you know, these weird, bizarre concepts. You know, for Superman, it's crazy, otherworldly stuff. You know, for Green Lantern, you know, it just gets bizarre and cosmic. There's, like, the Tale of Two Flashes, where, like, Golden Age Flash and Silver Age Flash have, like, you know, weird universal crossovers. And for Batman comics, it's just extremely silly crime capers. You know, this was before, you know, Christian Bale and Chris Nolan and, you know, Scott Snyder and Frank Miller and, you know, any of the modern artists and writers on these comics. And, you know, Joker wasn't just, you know, cutting his face off and stabbing people in the streets and doing experiments with bombs. You know, he wasn't Heath Ledger. He was just, you know, a weird dude with joy buzzers on his hands and, you know, punching glove box weapons or whatever.
He was just like the person who was crazy painting his face and going around doing clown things. Like, he wasn't even the homicidal maniac we know today.
Yeah, and I mean, like, thank goodness I really don't like modern Joker, because modern Joker is just a serial killer, and that's not interesting to me.
I like him. I thought he was hilarious in the animated series, and that was after that. I was like, I don't know what they're doing here. I mean, Heath Ledger did a good Joker. I mean, he did surprisingly well. But, you know, what they're doing nowadays, they try to get as dark and edgy and crazy as possible, and that's just not what I like about Joker. That's not why he was my favorite Batman villain when I was a kid.
Yeah. It's New 52 Joker, and it's Jared Leto Joker. I'm not into that.
We aren't even going to talk about Jared Leto Joker.
Yeah, not today, anyway.
Yeah, I keep forgetting we have to do that for Super Cinema eventually.
You know, we don't have to.
We can't just spend all our time reviewing good movies like Spider-Man 2.
Oh, damn it. I'm bummed out now because I just started scrolling through a big archive of Batman Silver Age covers, and I found a really good one that I used to have as a poster in my last house, but I think it accidentally got torn in some way.
Oh no. Bummer.
Yeah, it didn't survive the moving process. But it's a long hallway and Batman's like thrusting open the door in the very back. So he's kind of backlit by the light and his shadows cast forward. And it's just like a museum hall of a bunch of portraits of Joker, Mad Hatter, Mothman or Firefly, whichever one, I can't tell. Ra's al Ghul, Penguin, Riddler, Two-Face, and Poison Ivy all in big dramatic stances. And against the shadows, it's Prowl, the Dark Knight's rogue gallery, if you dare.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, it's really corny.
I love it.
Gosh. And, oh, and it looks like it's Gene Colan. God, just classic Batman. So yeah, Batman 66 isn't a parody of Batman. It's a fairly accurate representation of Batman.
I would say
that's just what the comics were.
When you think of what it was in the 60s, I mean, when you think of all those comics, they were cheesy. They were corny. They were vibrant and colorful, and they were escapism at the time. They weren't trying to be serious. They were trying to be funny. They were trying to be lighthearted. They were something that we could all get into and just kind of put away our worries and sit down and watch Saturday morning cartoons or read comic books that were all about these superheroes who were larger than life. And it was funny and it was enjoyable. And that's what I liked so much about like Batman 66 is it's so funny and quotable and memorable. And it's not, you don't watch it to be like critical of a superhero movie, like how superhero movies are a genre now. It's something that it stands all on its own as kind of a memory of what, how comic book movies came to be.
Yeah, it's escapism in the truest sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I love about the early times of comic book movies and comic book animated series and just comic books in general from like the 50s, 60s, is that's what it was, and it's still enjoyable now.
Yeah, and look, I mean, last week I specifically said that I really like it when they incorporate social issues in comic book movies and comic book stories in general, but it is also nice to just see, like, I mean, the weird bizarreness of something like this. Like, this is nonsense, and there's room for that, too, of just nonsense escapism.
And that's what it's supposed to be. It's not trying to be anything else, which I think is why it's such a good movie to watch. Like, it's not trying to take itself too seriously. It's just trying to be Batman and Robin, and that's what I love. And I mean, I have to admire the actors, the fact that I wonder if there has to be like a gag reel somewhere, because how do they say all of these lines without just breaking up? Like, that's just how great of actors they are, that they can just deliver this in total seriousness. Like, of course, the only thing that makes sense at the answer of this riddle is a sparrow with a machine gun. Like, how could it be anything else?
Yeah, there's a level of just dorky comedy to this. I know we almost keep saying that over and over again, but like, it's absurdist, and I that's what I absolutely love about it. It's funny through absurdism. Like, that's not that complicated of a concept. I keep trying to find a more complicated way to say that, but
I think what is good about it is that there's no complicated way to say this.
Yeah, exactly. It's just simplistically funny.
That's what sets it apart from what we see in comic book movies nowadays. I would say that it's closest to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Like, in terms of what we have now of comic book movies. Like, the reason that Guardians of the Galaxy was so new to us was because it was doing something that comic books used to do back in the 60s, which was be crazy and over the top and absurd and colorful. And we were so used to having our dark, gritty, gray, you know, comic book movies that when we saw this, it kind of, like, for me, it brought me back to the days of the animated cartoons and back to Batman.
Yeah, I completely agree. I can see where those parallels crop up. So if people haven't seen it, and, you know, obviously they absolutely should, you know, Nikki, you and I have both said that it's... Yeah, okay, it's on Netflix, so you have no excuse. But Nikki, you and I both said that it's our number one.
Yeah, I would think that it's definitely my number one.
Yeah. Donald and I did a special episode when we first started the show. It was almost our zero episode, where we talked about our top five favorite comic book movies. And Nikki, I feel that you and I should definitely do that as well.
Oh, we totally should.
Since you are not only the new host, but also it's been 3 years since I made that episode, and more movies have come out.
That should be our live thing.
Oh, yes, yes. We should definitely do a kind of a live discussion panel on that.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Rope in some other IB members, see what happens. Anyway. Yeah, no, like, it's number one for a reason, so you've absolutely got to watch it. But, like, the plot is so unbelievably simple, but they obviously have so much fun with it.
Because the plot literally, here's what I think, is because the plot is so simple, they're allowed to do so much more with these performances. That's what makes it, is the performances.
Yeah, it's so incredibly simple. Literally all that happens is that there is a jailbreak of, I don't know if they specifically say Arkham Asylum or no, it's just, no, you know, jailbreak. Gotham City Jail.
There was no jailbreak. They were just already at large.
Oh, yes, right.
It was known Commodore Schmidlap got still at kidnapped. Large.
Yeah, yes.
Commodore yeah, they pull Schmidlap. Up
a... Batman is summoned to Commissioner Gordon's office, and they report that Commodore Schmidlap has been abducted and his yacht has just disappeared. So they pull up the CCTV of the Gotham City offices and pull up a list of known super criminals at large. And luckily there is four, and exactly four of them. No one else was out of jail at the time. And it's Joker, as played by Cesar Romero. It is Riddler, as played by Frank Gorshin. Lee Merriweather as Catwoman, and as the Penguin, Burgess Meredith. These are all staples, of course, from the television show, except for Catwoman, who is Lee Merriweather. I believe this is her only appearance as Catwoman in the Batman 66 continuity.
As far as I know, yeah.
Otherwise, it's Eartha Kitt and Julie Newmar. So this was Lee Merriweather's only appearance as Catwoman.
Yeah, as far as I know.
And so that's our cast, and it's literally about, you know, Adam West's Batman and Burt Ward's Robin just trying to foil the evil machinations of this dynamic group of super criminals or whatever. Like, and it's obviously told in such, you know, wonderfully corny dialogue.
You what know, is with it, the United Underworld?
Yeah, the United Underworld or something like that. You know, it's their UN parody or whatever. You know, and it's told with, you know, the full biff, bam, pow fight scenes. It's told with corny dialogue. You know, weird, you know, Batman gadgets like Penguin's flying umbrella jetpacks. And, you know, the very famous shark repellent scene where Batman is wrestling with a very clearly foam shark. And he's like, and he yells up to Robin in a helicopter, "Quick, pass me the bat repellent." Robin, you know, grabs or puts the helicopter into autopilot and then does, like, some dumb acrobatic moves to get down the ladder and hand a literal can of shark repellent to Batman, who then sprays the shark and it drops into the water. Like, it's big, dumb fight scenes like that. You know, the helicopter almost crashes at one point and they land in a giant...
rubber in its crude form.
Yeah, like, foam rubber sail that's just in the middle of, like, downtown Gotham.
I thought I spotted it out of my peripheral vision.
Exactly. Like, you know, it's just, it makes no apologies for itself. It's literally just telling a dumb Batman story where there's, you know, crazy third act reveals, and Batman weirdly can't tell the difference between Catwoman and Catwoman's alter ego. He thinks they're genuinely two different people, even though it's super obvious it's one person.
Holy heartbreak.
Every single one of the villains has, like, just fun individual quirks to them. One of my favorite things is just... Okay, Burgess Meredith is doing his actual, like, kind of waddle as he moves around the submarine. Frank Gorshin's Riddler, he's, like, literally always, like, flexing his butt in different directions. Like, whenever he's, like, leaning on a console or leaning against a wall, like, he's just, like, stretching the hell out of his thighs.
What else are you supposed to do in that costume?
I mean, really, he's wearing a skin-tight, like, green fabric suit, so... it's when they sabotage and fight Bruce Wayne in Kitka's apartment that, like, Catwoman, like, starts, like, scratching her hands in the air like she's getting in a cat fight.
Oh, yeah, and then she, like, quickly puts it away, like...
Yeah. She catches herself and pretends that she wasn't doing that. And she's literally seconds ago going,
I know.
And she's like trying to act like nobody saw that. Like, it makes no apologies for itself. It's a big, silly movie. And that's, I mean, it's perfect. That's why I love it so much. It's so clear that the cast and crew are having so much fun with it. You know, it doesn't really try to hold itself to a story structure. It's just like a serialized adventure. You know, what would be a couple episodes or something, or a couple issues of Batman comics, compressed down to an hour and a half movie.
Oh, no, I agree. That's what I love about it, is, like, it feels like just one long Batman episode. And I would watch it over and over. I have watched it over and over again. I know pretty much every line from that movie, unapologetically. Yeah, so, like, what we loved so much about Spider-Man in comparison to Batman vs. Superman or Man of Steel was, it was so memorable. Like, we can quote, you know, "We'll meet again, Spider-Man." And it's the same way with Batman 66. You know, it's so memorable. It's so quotable. We all will remember it. Like, I hadn't seen it in probably 2 years when I saw it again for this podcast, and I still remembered the entirety of it. And, I mean, that's what a comic book movie, what I like so much about these superhero movies coming to life, is that basically it's like seeing the comic books in live action rather than an adaptation.
Yeah, that's always a really neat effect as well. And I think we saw that in the Spider-Man trilogy. I think we see that in the 80s Batman, too.
No.
The Batman, excuse me. 1989 Batman.
Mm-hmm.
With that version of Joker, too.
Right.
I think it's something we get a lot in the MCU. It's not always necessarily, you know, it's usually the more recent Marvel comics that we get, or perhaps the ultimate line of Marvel comics that we get in the MCU movies.
I would definitely say that they're doing the Ultimates line more.
Yeah. But it is such a nice experience when it seems to just come right off the panel like that. Oh, and I'd argue the 1978 Superman as well.
Oh, no, yeah, definitely.
Especially with that Fortress of Solitude and that version of Lex Luthor.
Oh, definitely.
Ms. Tesmacher? No, straight up, look, as previously stated, that 1978 Superman is my number two favorite comic book movie of all time. It's because Lex Luthor is my number one favorite comic book movie character of all time. Just his beautiful, "Ms. Tesmacher!" As he, like, yells that across the room, like, you know, what is this? Otisburg? God. Gene Hackman does such a delightful job as that version of Lex Luthor.
A+.
Superman.
A+, Lex.
But not to get distracted with 1978 Superman, which we've obviously already covered for this podcast, though I'd happily do 100 episodes on it. I mean, hell, you know, there's those shows like Star Wars Minute where they go through a movie 1 minute at a time. I mean, I'd absolutely do the Superman Minute. But that's the kind of podcast I don't necessarily have time for. Once again, our Patreon is patreon.com/infinitybreak. Every dollar helps us develop new shows, like not that one. Don't we wish? Oh, I mean, trust me, I wish I could make this my full-time job. Once again, that's patreon.com/infinitybreak. Every dollar helps us develop new shows.
Help Nikki talk forever about Spider-Man.
Help Ben pay the people who work harder at Infinity Break.
We want a wage. We're going to unionize.
That's fair.
We're all going to take up superhero identities and fight for the rights of entertainers worldwide.
I'm laughing, but I'm a capitalist pig. Anyway.
Wait, wasn't that Mysterio's whole gig?
Maybe. So what individual performance stood out to you the most? I know it's probably hard to pick favorites, but like, because it's such a wonderful cast, but like, what's your favorite?
Honestly, I love Cesar Romero and as the Joker, and Riddler is just really funny. But I mean, all of them are great. We can't bar, you know, Adam West, of course. He's my first Batman, and he, to me, is the truest Batman. And I respect his performance so much because, like I said before, how do you deliver those lines without breaking out into laughter? I could never do it. I was just sitting there going, I admire this man so much. Like, where's your, like, dude, come on. I could never do that. Like, it has to be a measure of their worth as actors that they could deliver these horribly corny lines and say the exploding shark was pulling my leg without dying. Like, it takes an amazing actor to do that.
It really does. I can't imagine how you can do anything like this straight-faced. Literally, after we recorded our Wonder Woman episode, you and I literally just went back and forth. And hell, before we started recording this episode, we just went back and forth just quoting bad Batman lines at each other.
They're so bad. They're so good, though. They're so good.
Do you have a favorite? I know I've got mine.
Quotes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
That's essential.
I think that's the one that I remember the most, besides, like, that entire exchange in Commissioner Gordon's office where they're all like, it happened at C. C is for Catwoman. Like,
it's all coming together for a,
in one a very tough riddle.
Riddler.
That exploding shark
seems
was
a little
pulling my leg. The Joker.
Seems a little fishy. Are you saying where there's a fish, there's a penguin?
There's a fish, there's a penguin.
No, Batman, no one was saying that. The world's greatest detective, everyone.
The only riddle that made sense to me that, like, I would have guessed the answer to was, what does a turkey do when it flies upside down? I was like, it gobbles up. I was like, ah, that's really funny. This is the first time I watched this. This was my reaction. I was like, gobbles up. Okay, yeah, that's funny. That was the first one, right? So I was like, okay, it can't possibly get any worse. That was bad, but it was funny. Like, what's weighs 5 ounces, sits in a tree, and is extremely dangerous? And a sparrow with a machine gun. I was like, what?
It is also super worth noting that these are 100%, and this is what I would argue is the best part. These are sky-written riddles.
Yeah, no,
these are written.
Holy Polaris, Batman. The missile wrote riddles in the sky.
Yeah, these are Riddler literally fiddling with, like, two TV knobs in a submarine, guiding a nuclear missile to write jokes in the sky for him.
God. And then afterwards.
Hey, man, I love this movie.
And then afterwards, everyone going, of course. Like, that could, of course, only be the, that could only be the answer. Why would you even think anything else other than a sparrow with a machine gun? You're right, Robin.
A Russian
Why
person?
Why don't we make Robin the detective?
A Russian person is going to slip on a banana peel and break her neck. Miss Kitka, how the fuck did you get that?
I don't know, but, you know, this is why Batman is the greatest detective. He sees the things that we would otherwise not.
Yep, exactly. World's greatest detective. And his young ward, Robin. Of course, my all-time favorite line is this, the,
At land.
Oh, yes, yes. My number two favorite line is just that, at land you are in command, at she it is me! Penguin line, as he's, like, waddling around the submarine. But my number one favorite line is, as Batman calls up Vice Admiral Fangschleister, I'm looking up at the IMDb quote right now, that's the exact name of that character, and asks if the United States Navy has recently sold any submarines.
We haven't done anything foolish, have we?
Disposing a pre-atomic submarine to persons who don't even leave their full addresses? Good day, Admiral. Literally, Batman is mad the United States Navy sold a submarine to someone who only left a P.O. box.
Well, that's realistic. I mean, when I look at that, I'm like, wow, that's the most Batman line in this entire movie. Like, that is the Batman line that is so Batman that it just encompasses every Batman ever. Like, I've been watching what? Justice League and the Batman animated series, yeah. And I'm, like, thinking about, he just throws that kind of shade.
Exactly.
So often. I was like, wow, that's Batman. That's so Batman. And the deadpan delivery of it. Good day, Admiral.
Why, we sold it to a Mr. P. N. N. Gwyn. Gwyn.
P. N. Gwyn.
P.
The Penguin. Thanks, Robin.
Oh, God. I love this movie. I don't know if I can pick a favorite, cast-wise. Those are my favorite quotes for sure. The disposing a pre-atomic submarine to persons who don't even leave their full address. Good day, Admiral. And the land you're in command at sea, it is me. Those are my favorite lines, but I don't know if I can pick a favorite character. I really love Cesar Romero's Joker, but, like, I'm a Riddler partisan when it comes to Riddler v. Joker.
Oh, I love Riddler, too.
Like, Frank Gorshin, like, just does so many delightful things. Like, he's wearing a corset for half that movie.
I love how he's, like, talking about, of course, the obvious plan that us villains could ever have, including the exploding arm. He's like, and here, right through the window into the arms of Penguin's exploding octopus?
Actually, yeah, you know what? It's Riddler for me.
It has.
Although I really, really, really like Cesar Romero's Joker, and I really, really like that Catwoman, and I really, really like that Penguin, and I just listed them all.
Yep, we just listed them all.
It's Riddler. Riddler's my number one, though.
Riddler's a good one.
He's absolutely fantastic. He just has such a, I mean, a wild way of speaking. We both discussed it, yeah, when he's discussing that plan, and he's got his, like, hands up in the air the whole time.
I've got the perfect victim.
Oh, God. He's absolutely wonderful. And that, I mean, that suit.
Also, he tells bad puns, just like me.
Yeah.
You know, this is probably where we got our senses of humor from.
Oh, I know it's where I got my sense of humor. Like, that's not even a joke. The Westport Saga, the long-suffering Infinity Break project that doesn't seem to come out all that often and is currently back in reproduction. Literally, I write the narration for that as if it were a Batman 66 episode.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking about, like, this absurdist sense of humor.
Oh, yeah, absolutely that carries through.
Yeah, no, and then we're just like, this is ridiculous, but, I'm totally serious.
Yeah, I think I've certainly maybe pulled some of Adam West's deadpan delivery for a lot of these things. Even if I can't do his exact voice.
It's pretty great, though.
Yeah.
Everything about this movie.
Well, thank you.
It just doesn't... Oh, half really? Of it is just so ridiculous that... It's so ridiculous that I can totally throw away all sense of... you know, logic. Like, I'm not... How would they possibly dehydrate and rehydrate? And there's parts of them everywhere because they don't actually pick them up and put them in the right amount of vials. There's differing amount of vials. Where did the vials go? Did they go up their butts when they suddenly appeared? I don't know. But I have to... I only think about that afterward because when I'm watching the movie, I'm so into how hilarious and absurdist the movie is. Like, the fact that they label everything, which I can associate with. That I'm not even oh my god, there's a bat everything. There's a bat shark repellent down the bat pole. And I don't know, everything about it is so ridiculous that it just appeals to everything that I am as a person.
It's silly enough and it's so, like, pseudoscientific enough that, like, it doesn't, that kind of stuff, like the science angles to it, like the dehydration specifically. You know, it doesn't matter, because it's not any more ridiculous than a teenager getting bit by a radioactive spider. Like, it's just early 60s pseudoscientific nonsense, and that's what makes this movie great. There's so much that makes this movie great. It's hard to pinpoint any one thing. It's just lightning in a bottle, fantastically funny. And I think it's funny to people who... I mean, I recently showed it to my partner recently. You know, they certainly haven't even read, like, probably the Batman hits, but, like, it's just a kind of silly comedy that even if you have a passing familiarity with superheroes, you can just dive right in. Or you can be a big fan of, like, the history of comic books and still get it just as well. It's almost universally funny in that sense.
It's an age thing, too. Like, my dad, my brother, and I watched it, and we're all in different time periods, and we all laughed.
Yeah, my parents and I.
Like, I know, my parents, when it comes to superhero movies now... My parents love the Spider-Man movies, and they loved Guardians of the Galaxy, and they'll watch, you know, superhero movies with me when I'm watching them, like Age of Ultron, and my dad loves Captain America, because he grew up with Captain America. But I mean, they wouldn't watch Man of Steel or Batman versus Superman. They did love Wonder Woman. I will say that, they did love Wonder Woman, because it was very much Wonder Woman.
Oh yeah, Wonder Woman's fantastic.
And so we watched this movie and they grew up with it and I grew up with it. And that, I think that's why I love it so much, is that there's a very, you know, connecting aspect of it, that no matter who you are, whether you know comic books, whether you love comic books, whether you're a Batman fan, whether you're not, I know I wasn't when I first watched this movie, you still love it as a funny movie. It's just funny to everybody. You don't have to know Batman. You don't have to know superheroes. And that's what makes it so good, is that it can appeal to such a wide audience, age range, interests, etc.
I completely agree. I think it's truly universal in that sense.
We love you, Adam West.
Yeah, rest in peace, man. Goodbye, chum. Jinx.
My first and truest Batman.
Pretty much same here. At least my favorite. I still think he's the best one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no offense to the others. Like, it's just, it's what I grew up with.
Yeah, no, for real. He was Batman for, I think, a lot of us. In terms of our generation and before. Because nowadays, the younger kids grew up on, like, the animated series, and now...
I mean, kind of, so did we. We kind of grew up on those as well, but definitely not in the same way. You know, yeah. One of these days, we're going to have to do the Burton and Schumacher quadrilogy. Oh, I mean, I like those movies.
It's the thought of watching all of them.
Yeah, that's fair. Those are movies that I think I saw as a TV cut, like, a bunch of times.
Yeah, like they
were, like, always on, like... Oh, I don't know. Who would be rebroadcasting those movies? Probably Fox? They're probably 20th Century Fox movies.
Probably. WB, maybe. Who knows? But, I mean, the thing with those movies is that I couldn't watch them all in a row if I tried, because I would get so tired of them. Because they had the same feel. And I'd be like, yeah, I think I'll just watch one and then wait a week and watch the second one and then whatever. I don't know. That's just the kind of person I am.
Oh, me too. I can always go back and revisit this kind of humor and, you know, this movie over and over and over again.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think we've kind of settled on our discussion of Batman 66. It's got universal appeal. It's just fantastically funny. It's absurdist and brilliant and just silly. And, you know, sometimes that's what you want out of a Batman movie.
Sometimes it's just what you want to see. When you're tired of all the nitty-gritty, trying-to-be-dark things. And I think we talked about this before, about going back to the origins of comic book movies. You know, how we're, like, seeing Guardians of the Galaxy and Justice League, or what Justice League is looking like so far. Kind of going back to that, seeing itself as a comic book movie, which is what Batman 66 was. I mean, yeah. That's where comic book movies really started out.
Yeah, it's also a bummer that we've swung so far in the other direction.
Yeah, so far in the other direction that now we see Guardians of the Galaxy and we're like, oh yeah, comic books used to be like this.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't expect, you know, modern superhero movies to be anything close to this weird 60s zany nonsense that is Batman 66. But I would kind of like a middle ground between what we've got now and
Batman 66. The exhausting 66. Stuff we're getting that I just... But, like, Avengers, the first Avengers. I walked out of that theater feeling elated.
Yeah.
It was action, it was cheesy, it was fun, all the characters, I finally got to see them. And then it started getting... I'm just gonna say, okay, Batman versus Superman and Man of Steel. I was like, what? Where's my color? Where's my humor? Where's the, God, he just died.
On past episodes of this podcast, I have been very vocal about the weird muted color scheme of Man of Steel and how I think that's bad and we just need blue and red. But, like, specifically...
I like the new costume.
Yeah, sure, but I need the color with it. I don't like the filters.
But I was glad that they didn't do the blue briefs. It was blue, right? Blue, red?
Red
briefs. I was glad that they modified the costume a little bit, because I was like, this is so ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, costuming is the one thing I can get behind in those movies. Anyway.
Well, but you know what is halfway between the zany silliness of this and the, like, you know, almost oppressive, self-serious darkness of like Batman vs. Superman. You've been watching a lot of it recently.
I am Night.
It's the JLA cartoons.
I love it, though.
You know, the JLA cartoons, Superman the Animated Series, Batman the Animated Series, basically just the whole, like, you know, Bruce Timm work. Like, that's the kind of, like, mid-range storytelling that I would love to see in the movies. And yeah, I'm fully willing to acknowledge we're kind of not going to get.
Because, I mean, they were glorious comic book superhero stuff, but they also dealt with some real-life things that are still relevant. And they were understandable for kids, but they were also, like, they're still real. Like, I'm rewatching it again and being like, oh, wow, that hit me right in the heart. Like, I totally understand how that feels, these questions of duality and power and responsibility. I mean, I would, but still having, like, a happy ending and still being able to, like, these heroes are, we still identify with them. We don't hate them. You know, like, I walked out of Batman vs. Superman going, I hate this.
Yeah, me too.
This is not the hero. I feel really bad for liking Batman.
We did an episode of Batman vs. Superman First Impressions in which I went on a straight-up 20-minute rant coming right out of the theater, in which I think rather eloquently explained what was wrong with that movie. But we don't need to dwell too negatively on the bad. I guess my point is that I wish we had a more middle-ground approach to DC storytelling.
Yeah, I think it would be, they have great material that they could pull from. And so far what I've seen from the Justice League movie, it looks like it's going to be, I'm hoping it's going to be good. I liked what I saw in the trailer. And I like what I've seen from the actors so far, but, you know, still, you know, have my reservations.
Yeah, me too. Well, only time will tell, but I think time has proven that Batman 66 really is a timeless movie.
Definitely. That's a great adjective. Timeless.
Thank you. I am very proud of ending this segment of Super Cinema on that. So I think that concludes our discussion on Batman 66, starring the late, great Adam West and Burt Ward, Cesar Romero, Lee Merriweather, Burgess Meredith, and Frank Gorshin. We'll be right back to talk about the comics that we've been reading.
Good night, old chum.
Hey Infinity Break fans, do you want to show your support and devotion for an extremely obscure group of entertainers? Well, now you can. Just go to our website at infinitybreak.net and click on the shop tab to be whisked away to our Redbubble, where you can find all sorts of awesome shirts, stickers, notebooks, and other gadgets decked out with icons from all of our most popular shows. Act now, because that stuff will be there forever.
So, obviously we really love comic book movies, and we especially love Batman 66, but you know what we love that much more? Comic books.
Comic books.
So every week here on Super Cinema, we take time to tell you what we have been reading in the wonderful world of comic books. I have not been reading that much, but Nikki, I know you have. What have you been reading, my friend?
Been reading lots of stuff. So I went to my library and picked up a whole bunch of Ultimate Spider-Man, the Miles, post-death of Peter Parker, Miles Morales run. And also I read the first... volume of the New 52 Justice League. And also I read Spider-Gwen, but mostly Justice League and Ultimate Spider-Man.
Go on.
So I was live tweeting it, and New 52 Superman.
Yeah, the New 52 is weird for me. I avoided a vast majority of it because I didn't like... I mean, look, if I've made anything clear throughout my time on Super Cinema, and even in this episode, I'm kind of allergic to Grimdark. And I know that was prevalent through a lot of the DC New 52. In fact, and weirdly, the only big New 52 story I ever have read is The Court of the Owls, which I've got on my bookshelf right now, courtesy of Donald Orr, who got it for me for my birthday 2 years ago. So I never read Justice League, so tell me about it.
So this New 52 Justice League is, Hal and Wally, I think. Yeah, and then, Diana, and then Bruce and Clark, and Aquaman, but less so. You know, he's kind of always been on the fence, I guess. But it's, of course, their first villain is Darkseid. I was like, great, okay, that's fine. I guess we'll do Darkseid again. Whatever. Yeah, gotta start out with Darkseid. Number one Justice League. Got it. And the art. I love the art. Everyone is just really attractive in that comic. Also, the Flash Green Lantern friendship is like my aesthetic. I love it. I love the way it's written. I love that they're just... they get along so well, and they hang together. It's just, it's like if some young adult boys were hanging around, if they were superheroes. It's pretty great. It's pretty similar to, you know, what I would imagine Justice League would be like.
Well,
you know, and then Diana is great.
And well, by the way, in total fairness, two young adult guys being superheroes is pretty much the premise of Flash and Green Lantern.
Yeah, and that's why they get along so well, but it's hilarious. And Diana, of course, they start out with her trying ice cream for the first time and just going on about how proud she is that humans have made ice cream.
Yeah, yeah, that's been a fun trope.
I love that it shows up everywhere Diana is. I'm like, well, yep, I love it. Thanks, Diana. That's pretty much, yeah, ice cream's pretty great. And then we have Bruce and Clark, and Batman's pretty similar to what you would think he would be, and Superman's kind of an asshole, but I love the way he's drawn, so I can forgive it.
Is that do you have it on hand right next to you?
I do not.
Oh, is that Jim Lee art?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up. No, the first volume where it's, like, talking about how they all, like, get together and become the Justice League, it's enjoyable. I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's Geoff Johns and Jim Lee.
Yeah.
Geoff Johns, who's obviously the current creative head of DC Comics, both comics and film. So, yeah, one of the major criticisms I did see is that if the New 52 is supposed to be the brand new entry point to this world, that it is a little odd for them to just jump into Darkseid right off the bat.
Yeah, like, they should have built up, I guess, to Darkseid.
Yeah, and that is one of the weird things about the New 52 overall, and I saw a lot of criticism about this stuff as all these books were coming out, you know, some now 3, 4, or 5 years ago, I think? I guess that, wow, the New 52 happened while I was in high school. Is that for a series that was ostensibly about starting over a universe, it wasn't all that introductory friendly. And that it did just jump straight into some of the big complicated DC concepts like the Fourth World and Darkseid just right off the bat. And that's kind of been their trend now, because basically Justice League Volume 1, New 52, is pretty much the pattern for the Justice League movie, since Darkseid is going to be that villain, you know, with all the parademons and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like, it seems weird if you're going to start over to jump into, like, Jack Kirby's Fourth World as your introduction. Darkseid seems like a villain you'd want to save for, like, I mean, at least, like, a year or two in. Although, I guess a year in comics is only 12 issues, but even so. What?
Nah. Oh, I also read Spider-Man.
Wait, why were you laughing?
Oh, I was laughing because I was actually thinking about Spider-Man when you said that.
Oh, about, okay. Like, I thought you were laughing at me.
No, about, you know, how long sometimes it takes for comics to come out.
Oh, all right, go for it.
So, Spider-Man, which was a volume where Peter Parker gets transported into the Ultimate Spider-Man universe, where he dies and Miles Morales becomes Spider-Man. So, it's basically Miles and Peter meeting. And then this was in, like, 2013. And then only this summer is the second part of... and it ended on a huge cliffhanger. Only now this summer is the second volume of Spider-Man going to come out.
Oh, that's a hell of a wait.
Yeah, so I was like, I can't do this. Like, this is too long. And then someone else was like, we've been waiting 5 years.
Yeah, I think I saw that exchange on Twitter with you.
I was like, oh man. Yeah. Yeah, that's about it. How about you? What have you been reading?
Well, I actually have not had a ton of time to read comics. Unfortunately, I've been wrapped up in a lot of Infinity Break projects, including recording the pilot episode of Cursed Seas, which is going to be a fantastic success and will be coming out in the middle of July. I, however, have had time to basically live tweet my read-through of the 1990 Ghost Rider series, which is absurdly dumb and ridiculous. I'm a huge fan of the darker end of Marvel. I like Daredevil and Doctor Strange and Ghost Rider and like that whole group. I don't necessarily know why, I just kind of do. It's weird to me. But in particular, I love Ghost Rider. I just love the absurdity of that character. This is, I believe, the first appearance of Danny Ketch as the Ghost Rider. So I've been live tweeting my read through of that as it goes from just a simple story about like a graveyard black market deal going wrong to involving the Kingpin, the Hand, Ghost Rider, ninjas, weird like 80s disco thugs. Like, it's just absurd. It's absurd 90s comics, but the art is so unbelievably fantastic. I'm mostly just tweeting out splash panels of Ghost Rider riding into trouble, yelling, "Don't you hurt those kids!" Except he doesn't quite sound like Batman and sounds however a skeleton does, I guess.
Whatever a skeleton sounds like.
Oh, yeah. What if it's just Skeletor?
That's exactly what that's the only reference I have, really.
I am the spirit of vengeance.
Don't hurt those kids.
Stare into my soul.
I can't believe this. Actually, it's us. I can't believe it.
What's fear the wrath of my penance stare. And he prayed. Anyway, all right, before this becomes He-Man impersonations, I think that concludes our episode of Super Cinema. Once again, we were talking about Black Panther, Batman 66, Ghost Rider, Spider-Man, and Justice League. There we go. I remembered the other thing. Hey, I remembered all of them this time.
Yay.
Once again, I'm your host, Ben Hamlin. I'm joined, as always, by...
Nikki Boylan.
Nikki, where can we find you on your recently reinvigorated, soon-to-be-quite-quiet Twitter?
Oh, yeah. It's Kitschi, K-I-T-I-S-C-I, and yeah, about that. I'm going on hiatus because I got employed by the Girl Scouts of America to be a camp counselor at one of their summer camps, so my access to the internet will be very restricted, so I'll still be checking up on my social media as often as I can, but I won't be doing any videos or podcasts until I come back in August.
An absolute tragedy. You're doing noble work over there at the camp. And in your place, I've booked a number of guest hosts already, including past guests Kevin Veldman and Daryl Mansell, as well as Nesta Paragon, an arcane artist, and Curse C's character, Bethany Luthold, as various guest hosts. And we'll, of course, be getting some more, but those are the ones that I can confirm right off the bat. So it's still going to be a summer of Super Cinema. This might be the longest stretch in a row that we've done regular episodes, and I hope to keep that running for as long as possible. Yay. You can find me at Ben C. Hammond on Twitter, in which you are welcome to follow along as I read through Ghost Rider and whatever issue of comics I happen to be able to download from Marvel Unlimited during my very limited work breaks. Sometimes it doesn't download before I reach the end and have to clock back into work, but whatever. And of course, you are more than welcome to discuss comics with me. I'm always ready to throw down about Superman. Super Cinema comes out every other Thursday from Infinity Break. That's infinitybreak.net. You can go to infinitybreak.net/shows to find our other comics, podcasts, and video series. And hopefully we're going to be adding more video series down the line. We are about to launch Curse Seas later in July, which I've already mentioned. It's a Pathfinder Dungeons & Dragons podcast starring myself, Jacob McCarthy, Bethany Luthold, and Marketing Director Kat Wendt. It just looks like it's going to be a romp, and I'm very, very excited for that. But I believe this pretty much concludes our episode of Super Cinema. If you like what we do here, you can go to patreon.com/infinitybreak and donate any dollar amount you want per month. You get special behind-the-scenes access to a number of behind-the-scenes audio and video segments. And right now, we're trying to save up to basically improve our marketing budget so we can actually get the word out about these shows, as well as perhaps get new camera technologies and experiment with community shows in the area. But we can only do that with your support. Once again, that's patreon.com/infinitybreak. Especially if you like what we do. And if you like this show in particular, we absolutely encourage you to leave a review for us on iTunes or any of the platforms that you can find our podcasts. It helps more people find us, and, you know, that makes doing this show that much more worthwhile. We recently got some new fans and feedback recently, and let me tell you, after years of doing this show to an empty theater, it's really nice knowing people actually like what we do. Very specifically, I'd ask you to spread the word. If each single individual listener of ours told one or two other people, I mean, that would literally triple our audience, and that would be massive. Like, right? Just by basic math, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
So tell your friends, stay in the loop. This has been Super Cinema. I'm Ben Hamlin.
And I'm Nikki Boylan.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Remember, kids, don't give away pre-nuclear submarines to people who don't disclose their full addresses.
This podcast was part of Infinity Break, where we tell stories our own way. If you want to stay in the loop about what we do here at Infinity Break, you can find us on any social media platform at InfinityBreak23. That's Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. If you like what we do here at Infinity Break, check out our other shows, comics, and videos at InfinityBreak.net and help spread the word by telling other people about our team. Leave a review on iTunes. The more 5-star reviews we have, the easier it is for people to find us and share in the infinite madness. Don't forget to check out our store under the Shop tab on our site, and if you're feeling generous, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/infinitybreak. Your monthly donation can help us improve the quality of this show and develop more shows for your listening and viewing pleasure. Until next time, Infinity Breakers, stay in the loop.